attorney. Just give him a call.
This is Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law with attorney Joe Pippin. If you have a legal question, call Joe right now in Tampa. Call 813-287-5700. Anywhere else, toll free at 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. The law office is open. And now your host, Joe Pippin.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. I'm attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. The law office is open. And in studio, we have attorney Patrick Smith again today.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. How are you doing, Patrick?
I'm great, Joe. How are you?
All right. Ready to answer some questions?
Yes, sir.
I might think of one or two for you as well.
I look forward to it.
All right, so if you have a legal question, it can be about wills, trusts, probate, guardianship, power of attorneys, health care surrogates, living wills, can be, we're going to talk a little bit today about timeshares. So if you have a timeshare and wanting to know how that's going to play out in your estate plan and you don't really want it in your life now, how do you get rid of it? We might discuss that a little bit as well. But if you have a legal question, can be any of those areas. Plus, if you just have a legal topic you'd like for us to talk about a little bit, you have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. Again, the name of the show is Ask an Attorney. The format of the show, it's a live show you're listening to, where you can call in with your legal question. Your question hopefully will help you a lot, get you pointed in the right direction, and it might help other listeners. We get this all the time. I was listening to your show, and I learned about so-and-so, and it really helped me. I was in the middle of trying to figure out what to do, and that's the whole purpose of the show, is to answer legal questions. Always like that first call, 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Well, Patrick, let's get right into timeshares.
Let's go.
All right. So you own a timeshare. It's worth something. If you died with it just in your name, it would go through probate.
Yes, sir.
And if it's in just in your name in another state as real estate, you got two probates.
That's right.
You got one in Florida.
Primary.
Yeah. And you got real estate's always probated wherever it's situated. So we're gonna talk to Dan first, though, before we come back to that. So Dan in St. Pete, what can we do for you?
Good morning, Joe. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
We're getting ready to move out of Florida, and our concern is we've heard all these stories about having your furniture lost or destroyed or delayed or additional expenses stuck onto your bill after you sign a contract. So I'm wondering, in your opinion, what kind of precautions would you take or should be taken regarding hiring a moving company to move your valuables from one place to another?
Well, you definitely want to get a signed inventory as things go on the truck. You know, get the driver to sign it, the packers to sign it. Make sure you check online with Better Business Bureau or the other many agencies. You can check the reputation of the company. Make sure they're insured. Make sure there's insurance that they have for lost items. And make doggone sure you have a good inventory list. Patrick, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I actually just went through this. And so, yeah, you want to make sure you have a good inventory list. You want to make sure they're properly insured, as you said. And I also think it's a good idea to be on site. I think a lot of people hire movers, and then oftentimes they vacate. When I moved, we definitely wanted to be, at least one of us, between my wife and I, someone on boots on the ground there in case there's an issue so you can oversee things. And I'm certainly glad that we did.
I thought of another thing, too. You want to have a guaranteed delivery date.
Yes.
With penalties if they don't make it.
And if you can negotiate a flat fee for the movers as opposed to an hourly rate, oftentimes that leads to little faster mm-hmm. work. So I think that's a good idea.
Now, some companies won't give you a guaranteed delivery date. But I think that's very, very important. So I think you need to interview a few companies and find one that would. Because, for example, suppose you move from Virginia to Florida and you don't have a guaranteed delivery date. Well, hey, they might want to fill up the truck. They might have to drive to Atlanta. They might have to drive to New Orleans. They might have to drive to a ton of other places to fill up their truck with the final destination to be Florida. So then you're hanging, and then the more stops they have, the more probability of something getting lost. So you want to have a good inventory and a guaranteed delivery date, a reasonable cost, and for them to have insurance.
Is there any way you could prevent additional fees that weren't, if it's in the contract, then that's got to be it, right?
Yep. The contract is the four corners of the document, so there shouldn't be additional fees.
Okay.
Unless they're mentioned in the contract.
All righty. Hey, I appreciate your time and expertise.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
You're listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. I'm Attorney Joe Pippin. Today, Attorney Patrick Smith is in studio, and we're answering your legal questions, and you have a toll-free number, no matter where you're listening, at 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open.
Joe, it's oftentimes that first call kind of sets the theme for the show, so it'll be interesting to see if the rest of the calls today sort of have a moving or a contract bent to them. So we'll have to stay tuned to see if that call set the theme.
I'm guessing we'll only have two more calls that deal with that issue.
I'll take the over.
All right, so we have another call coming in, so we'll find out very, very quickly. So, Patrick, so somebody comes in with a timeshare, and you're talking about it as part of what the estate plan and what to do with it. And we're going to go to Andrew in Tampa. Andrew.
Hey, how are we doing today?
You have a timeshare?
No, I just had a comment on the last caller. You guys forgot to mention that you should interview multiple companies because of price, too, because they wired.
No, I said that.
Yeah, Joe said that.
I said that.
Oh, I didn't catch that. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Andrew,
thing, and we had one quote that was almost $10,000 higher than the other guy.
Andrew, so. You need to get your ears checked, though.
No, Andrew.
Listen more closely to the show.
Andrew, I appreciate your call because this counts as one of the calls that I need because technically this was a call about a moving company. So.
Yeah, oh, there you go.
All right, well, there you go.
Thanks. I'm glad I could help you out. All right, have a good day, guys.
But, Andrew, you didn't help me. So. All right, let's go to Nick. Nick in Sarasota.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
This is probably a little off-the-wall question, but has anybody successfully sued the Florida Lottery for a deceptive practice or fraud?
Well, that's something I wouldn't know. I would guess that everybody gets sued sooner or later, but not maybe for deceptive fraud. You mean on advertising?
Well, sort of. I mean, they go, win the dream and all this kind of stuff. And so, for instance, on these scratch-off cards, if you take the losing cards and scratch off all the panels, there's anywhere from $2 to $4 million if you were to get, say, the money bag symbol, and which states you get all the prizes on the card. So what happens if you get the money bag and the whole thing doesn't come to $100?
Yeah, I don't play lotto tickets, so I don't know about. Do you know what he's talking about exactly?
Yeah,
Patrick?
I actually have a former teammate of mine who is a fantastic scratch-off ticket player, so I know what he's speaking about. But I think so. If you flip your wonderful scratch-off item over, you see all that disclaimer language on the back, Nick. Yeah, read that language. Sometimes that's called exculpatory language, and that's basically going to torpedo anything that you would bring in a lawsuit, I think, in most circumstances. Granted, any sort of lawsuit, but especially one against the lotto, would certainly be a gamble.
The other thing I'd like to tell you is I would never encourage anyone to play the lottery. However, I have represented like 5 lotto winners in my career. And the very last one, the 5th one, was just within the last 6 months or so up in Jacksonville. A gentleman won like $800,000 on a scratch-off. Believe it or not, I never heard of scratch-offs being that high, but he won that much. And I've had the pleasure of going to Jacksonville to Tallahassee twice with 2 winners. One was a $38 million winner, and one was a $7 million winner, to go through the whole prize collection process, which was very interesting. But anyway, I'm not encouraging people to play the lotto. because I know Pastor Mickey Carter would take me off the air in Haines City if I had to encourage people to do that, and he would preach a sermon on you got to earn your money the hard way.
But if you win, don't forget to tithe.
Yeah, right. So. There's some stories about that, because Pastor Charlie Martin, one time, somebody asked him.
Oh, Pastor Charlie.
Somebody asked Pastor Charlie if I win that lotto, would you accept the prize money? I'd like to give it all to the church, and would you accept it? Would you accept lotto money? And Pastor Charlie said, yes, because Satan's had it long enough. So
that's a very pastoral answer.
Well, I'm just, it just seems to me that, and maybe those disclaimers have something on it, but that seems to me to be, a particularly heinous outcome if, the come on is, regardless whether you should play or not or win or lose. I mean, when you play your money, you could expect to lose. But if you get the so-called grand prize and there's nothing grand about it, that seems to me to be a fraudulent come on.
Well, I think you're playing a little bit of semantics there. I mean, now you're measuring what is grand versus what is not grand. So let's talk about, what's grand to someone here in the United States versus what's grand to someone in, Western Africa or something of that nature.
You should understand the contest before you play. Wouldn't that be the state argument? Look, we put rules on the contest. Here are the rules. Here's how you win. And
let me tell you what the exhibits would be. You got 10 cards randomly picked out in the same game, and every other one has $2 million or more in prizes. But when you get the one that's got the get every panel with a bag and there's not $100 on it, that sounds to me like that was programmed in so you don't get the expected win.
All right. Nick, do you remember a great Jimmy Cagney movie called Love's Lovely Counterfeit?
So this I'm not quite that old.
All right. Well, neither am I, but I still love the movie. So Jimmy Cagney is convincing the commissioner that pinball machines are illegal because they are a game of chance. So he gets them outlawed, and then after he gets them outlawed, he repackages the pinball machines. Says they're the same pinball machines, by the way. He says, but these are different. These are a game of skill, so they're not gambling. And that's what they're going to say. I think that's going to be their defense. They're going to say to you that the game of chance that you're playing here is not only the chance that you win, it's the game of chance what you win. So whether the prize is grand or not, and I think your assertion that because they put on there the grand prize, the prize must, by your definition, meet your definition of grand. That's a little rich. I don't think that's going to get legs in the courtroom.
Well, I guess all I could hope for is a jury of lotto players. But it just I think
you got to hope to get to the jury. I don't know that you're going to get there. But, I mean, I would love to read the case one day.
Hey, Nick, the other consideration, if you're thinking about this, is finding an attorney to take your case on a contingent basis. Because
that's exactly what I would want to do.
Yeah, exactly. I figured you might. And whether attorney, attorney's got to have a reasonable expectation of more than probably 75% chance of victory before they're going to take a contingency case. It's not a 50-50 deal. They're not going to spend. That would be a big case. I mean, that would take, because you're dealing with a state who has tons of attorneys. And don't care what the costs are, pretty much, I would think, to defend that. And then you're going to have a team of attorneys to attack it, and they're not going to do it for free, and probably not going to take it on a contingency basis.
And I bet that attorney that takes the case, their business card, you actually have to, scratch off part of it to see the attorney's name, and then the attorney's phone number, and then the fax line.
All right. I hope it gave you something to think about there, Nick. All right. Thanks for calling.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, you're listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. I'm Attorney Joe Pippin, host of Ask an Attorney for over 34 years now and running, and Attorney Patrick Smith, who's been with the firm. You've been with the firm for 13 years now?
As an attorney, and then when you factor in the days working as an intern / clerk, that was 2004, so 15 years.
15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've had a great relationship. Enjoy always being with Patrick.
Absolutely.
And he's a delight to have on the show as well. So if you have a question for either one of us, you have a toll-free number, which is 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. So, Patrick, do you own a timeshare?
No, sir.
Would you ever own one?
No, sir. My parents do, and they've often asked me questions about it, and they've actually got an interesting issue coming up with their timeshare. So when these timeshares were formed, a lot of them were formed in the 80s, and under the state law at that time, they had a terminus. And the terminus on these timeshares was 2022. Well, in 1981, they're like, that's forever away. We don't have to worry about it. Well, now that's coming up. So the situation they're facing, unless a majority of the timeshare owners vote to continue the timeshare, it reduces to tenant in common, which means you and 51 other people own that unit outright with no division into weeks or anything, and it's going to lead to the biggest partition mess of your lifetime. So I think that a lot of people worry about, you know, the issues with divisibility, passing along the timeshare, something like that. But there's other issues that can happen during your lifetime, the maintenance fees going up or these sorts of issues with the timeshare period ending.
All right. We're going to try to weave timeshares into our conversation today, but then we've got a full board of callers. Let's go to Rose in Tampa. Hey, Rose.
Hi.
Hi, Rose. What can we do for you?
I have a question. If you're on disability, let's say Social Security disability and workman's comp disability, and you receive an inherit, would any of those two agencies, do they have the right to intervene in that gift?
No, but I know that if you are on certain government benefits and receive money and you have more than the amount of money you can have in a month, say like $2,000, you could lose. People get inheritances sometimes and lose benefits. Or people, inheritance and they're on government benefits and now they have money, so then they have to basically reorganize that money or spend that money, and let's say reorganize would be the better choice, to still qualify. I had a case just this week where the person's was on government benefits, and if they received an inheritance, they would lose their benefits for a while, unless they did some pre-planning. The easier thing, this was a mother that had a son who was on government benefits, and the mother's in hospice, and the son was going to get $500,000, I forget the amount of money. But he would have lost all of his government benefits. And if you have a special needs child that's on government benefits and you leave them an inheritance, they could lose that. So there are ways to do some pre-planning so you don't lose the money, though. You can create certain types of special needs trust ahead of time to receive the money. Does that help?
So, a little bit. I mean, the disability comes from Medicare.
Yeah, Medicare Social Security disability, I don't think would be affected.
No.
But there are other Social Security disability would not be affected, but there are other benefits that would. So it just depends on what benefits we're talking about.
If it's some sort of need based benefit, you just need to read the award letter and it'll set out the terms and conditions as far as what you're allowed to receive.
Okay, Rose?
Okay, so let's say the need is it's in the psychiatric category. Social Security disability in the psychiatric category. Would that be affected?
I think Social Security disability is not going to be affected.
Yeah, that's not need-based necessarily, so.
Rose, if you want to call us off the air, we'd be glad to talk to you in more detail and get more facts from you.
All right.
Thanks for calling, Rose.
Thanks. Let's go to Sandy and Holiday.
Hi, I'm actually calling with a question for a friend of mine.
Sandy, you are. No, I'm just kidding.
I am, really. when you put in a deposit for a rental property and they do the background check and then they come back and tell you you didn't qualify, are they required to tell you the actual reasons why?
I don't think so.
Because she feels like she is one of many people applying for the same property. When she checked him out afterwards, he's got really bad reviews that he puts properties up that aren't actually for rent, and then he denies you. And then when you complain, he shows you a really cruddy property to get instead.
Does she think it's a discrimination problem? I mean, does she have a reason
young,
to think? Yeah.
But her credit's good. She's got a good job. Husband has a good job. They don't have issues. They have children. That kind of thing.
I'd probably tell her to write a certified letter demanding the reason why she was disqualified, because she feels like she was discriminated against because of her age. And before she sees an attorney with her argument, she would like to the reason that she was rejected justified.
Okay. Because, I mean, you could literally put in 10 applications and be out $1,000 before you even get an apartment. You know, if they just take your money and deny you and take somebody else over you. Do you see what I'm getting at there?
Mm-hmm. Well,
legally, they don't have a legal obligation to give you a written reason why you're denied?
Well, let's say they do. So they manufacture a reason that's completely legitimate. Is that going to sate your appetite?
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, so we denied you because your credit score is not over 800.
So they can set the parameters any way they want.
Hold on. You didn't say that they were setting parameters. You said they just had to give you a reason. Does that reason satisfy you?
Right.
No,
right,
your suspicion's still there. So take Joe's advice. Address the suspicion head on and say, if you think you're being denied because of some discriminatory reason, call a spade and call them out and ask.
Well, suppose you got that in writing, though, that your credit score wasn't over. I'd get everything in writing because verbal doesn't really work. So you get in writing that your credit score wasn't over 800, but then you could go discover from other tenants whether or not they were over 800, because you suspect that there's some really old cars and people didn't have transportation money and their credit score couldn't be that good.
They just happened to have fantastic credit.
Right.
And then you'd have to prove your case. And then the real question then is, do you want the economics of proving that, or just go find a place that will want you and you'd be happy there, basically.
Right. I think what she suspects is that he just advertises properties for rent and doesn't actually really have them for rent, and just is taking the application fees.
Well, that's good old-fashioned fraud. I mean, if you got proof of that.
Right.
Well, take an application fee for an unknown apartment?
Or an apartment that's not for rent. People have gone, when she checked him out on the Better Business Bureau, he actually had people looking at apartments that were under construction and nowhere ready to be rented. And then after they complained, he showed them other properties.
And he gets a fee up front to...
$150 up front.
But these were his properties, right? Like, he's not showing you someone else's property. Okay,
the
Empire State Building. If you'd like to rent it, we'll consider you.
Or I'm going to rent you this bridge.
That's right.
Right.
All right.
Right. And then when you can't rent that, he'll show you some other property that's not as desirable, I guess is how it's working out.
Hey, if he's committing fraud, you could easily just have the state attorney investigating.
Yeah, that's a crime.
Okay. Okay. That's good help.
All right.
All right. Thank you, guys. Have a good day.
Good luck.
All right. Phone lines are open at 877-943-9673. And, Patrick, I've been thinking about Andrew, the second caller.
Yes, sir.
I was going to give you a half a point, half a question.
Then I'll proceed under protest. So, hey, by the way, we had a question come in over Instagram, and I think it does pair to our early conversation about timeshares.
Mm-hmm.
Someone wants us to address what the risks are, the dangers of not funding assets into a trust.
All right. Well, you and I actually talked about that, too. But let's talk to Lynn, and we'll make that our next question.
All right, great.
All right, Lynn in Brooksville.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, hello.
Yes, you're on.
Okay, here's my question. My husband had surgery. It didn't go well. He's in the ICU. He's able to talk and everything. We have no will.
Mm-hmm.
What do you suggest? Some people are telling me I don't need one. Other people are telling me I can go online and buy one of those online kits.
Are these people lawyers?
No.
Then stop listening to them. Don't take legal advice.
All right, so he can't talk. Can he...
Yes. Yes, he can talk and he can sign.
Oh, well, attorneys go to hospital. We go to hospitals and meet
all the time.
Clients and
get
documents done.
Okay, so you don't think like the online will...
All right, so here's why somebody might have told you don't need a will. They might have told you don't need a will because you're married and you and everything jointly with right of survivorship, or just jointly between husband and wife.
Yes.
Now, if your husband died, would a will be needed if that was exactly positively true?
Well, no. Oh, okay. I thought you said no.
Go ahead. Why did you say no?
Because we own everything jointly, and we don't have, like, vast bank accounts or anything like that.
Yeah, I always tell couples, though, that own everything joint, do documents, because you both might die at the same time.
Could be in an accident. Oh, my.
He could die, yeah. And then you could be go through a couple of years of not really wanting to think about estate planning, and then something could happen to you. Incapacity could happen to you. So I would encourage everyone to, you know, at least have a will and also consider a trust. And then you need a durable power of attorney, health care, surrogate, and some other documents as well.
Yep.
Okay.
So, and there are attorneys that will go into a, you know, talk to you and get something prepared and go into a hospital to get it signed. So,
okay, so I just need to check around and find an attorney that'll do that.
Yeah, Lynn, my analogy for the pro forma docs versus visiting attorney is kind of like if you walked into a, like I say, a Saks Fifth Avenue or a department store and you were naked and you just grabbed the first set of clothing you came to, you put it on, you're no longer naked, but you didn't check that you were right in the right section, you didn't check sizes or anything, but you're clothed. Versus if you visit your tailor in the privacy of the fitting room, you select a fabric, you have a fitting, now you not only are not naked, but you look good. That's the difference in the document. So it's a difference of a promise of this document is not invalid versus the promise of this is the optimal document for you and your family.
Okay, thank you.
All right, well, thanks for listening. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Good luck, Lynn.
Bye.
All right. You're listening to Ask an Attorney all about Florida law. I'm Attorney Joe Pippin, along with Attorney Patrick Smith. Today we're here for another 20 minutes or so to answer your legal questions. And you have a toll-free number, which is 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. All right, your Instagram question. Patrick's on Instagram, by the way. And how do they watch you if they want to
see
that?
So just download the Instagram app and then search for @AttorneyPatrickSmith, and you can watch us live on Saturday.
And also, you can also watch us both on Facebook.
It's true.
We or WeBeamTV.com. We have a show on WeBeamTV.com. They come in every other week and film us doing a radio show. And then they make that into a program, and then you can go on their network and watch that. They have a bunch of programs listed there. Also, we post the program on my YouTube channel, and you can also watch it live on Facebook. All kind of ways you can listen and watch Ask an Attorney all about Florida law. All right, Patrick, someone has a timeshare, and they have a living trust, and your question is, and we talked about this. Actually, that's great somebody could think of that question and send it to you. Do you fund it into a trust? Is that the question?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of the similar vibe. Is what if you don't put an asset into the trust? And you sort of touched on it at the start of the show, which is it goes through probate, which can add expense. Your question about whether or not it should be in the trust is a different question. It's not so much the consequence if it's not in the trust, but should I put my timeshare in the trust? And what I recommend doing is considering whether or not you want to pass along the timeshare as an asset to the beneficiaries. If it's something you intend to pass along, it absolutely needs to be in the trust. Otherwise, it'll go through probate.
All right. Very good. Let's go to, let's see who called here first. Let's go to Peter in Tampa.
Morning, Joe. Thanks for your information and your being on the air for so long.
Oh, our pleasure. What can we do for you?
Yeah. What website or what would you recommend on getting information on current real estate laws and, you know, just regulating landlords?
I would, if there's a whole landlord tenant statute,
mm-hmm.
and you could just Google Florida statutes landlord tenant law. And you'll come up with the statute numbers, and you'll see, you know, you can, it's pretty easy reading, and it's not a real long statute.
There's a really easy website. It's myflorida.com, and you just click on the legislature section, And then directly under, after you click on that, you'll see a little tab that says look up a statute. Click on that, and you can type in landlord-tenant, and it'll take you right to it.
Okay.
And if you typed in a legal topic like landlord-tenant eviction, there are blogs with attorneys writing articles on it.
Lots of them.
The statutes will probably pop up. There's lots of information you can get, and you can ask me a question right now if you've got a burning landlord-tenant question you could ask, and we could try to tackle it right here on the radio. But I don't.
I just wanted to know, you know, where I could find the best resource for, like you mentioned, the laws for landlord-tenant. I've got an unrelated question, and how do you find a good lawyer? What's the best way to do that?
Mission accomplished. You've already done it.
So there are a number of ways. You can Google, of course, for attorneys in different practice areas, and then you could just call a few to interview and see if you're compatible with them. You could contact the local bar association, which has a referral list for people, for attorneys that have signed up in different practice areas. The Florida Bar has a referral system as well. You can ask friends around the table, out to dining or something. Who have you used for estate planning or real estate law, and who have you had a good experience with? You know, there are a lot of websites. There are a lot of neighborhood. There are lists within communities now.
Mm-hmm.
That will review services by construction attorneys and everything.
Like the Nextdoor app. That's really
popular.
Yeah,
Nextdoor.
Right.
Yeah, and a few of the communities, like in Sun City Center, so I asked people, where'd you get my name from? Oh, my Nextdoor neighbor app. Everybody's giving you great ratings, and that's why I'm here today, because you've got so highly recommended on these community sites. But there's a list of things you can find a good attorney.
All right. Thank you very much.
Or Peter, if that sounds like just too much work, we'll give out our contact information later in the show. You call Joe or me, and either of us will make sure you get a fantastic attorney.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, people call us all the time, and maybe in practice areas, we'll talk just about practice areas that we don't practice in. We have a list of attorneys. I have a list of attorneys that have been on the radio show that I'd recommend in different practice areas, and we'd be glad to make referrals for you. Let's go to Steve in Jacksonville.
Morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Appreciate you guys taking my call. I got something that I've run into that really surprised me. My wife and I bought some plots at a cemetery years ago in Tennessee, and then we moved to Florida, and we transferred those plots because of them being in a group it's nationwide. We transferred them to Jacksonville, Florida. So now we're trying to sell those plots, and the cemetery or the company that owns the real estate that we have bought says we cannot sell those. We can either give it to them or we can donate it to somebody, but we cannot sell those plots. Have you ever heard of anything like this?
Well, it's all going to be on the contract that you signed when you bought them.
It's really a dead industry. It's one of those things where it's governed by the terms of the contract as far as the resale, and you're going to live and die by the terms. I've seen
these
types
of contracts. Is that a pun?
That was.
Is it a dead cemetery?
Pardon my joke. I know it's a grave subject matter, guys. I apologize.
This is a deadly subject. All right. Is that it?
Okay. Well,
you know, so, yeah, have an attorney, like, review the contract.
Yes, that's the answer.
Okay.
All right.
We can do that.
All right, thanks.
Guys, thank you.
All right. Let's go to Laura in Haines City.
Hi.
Laura, you listening on 90.3 FM?
Yes, sir.
All right. What can we do for you?
My grandson is in jail for domestic violence, and he's had two previous convictions on that. And we're wondering if we should get the Marchment Act, if it would influence the judge to realize that he has a drug addiction, specifically meth, is causing his behavior. Would make a difference for whether...
Well, he's already in jail?
Yes, sir.
So the Marchment Act would be a way to get him help if he wasn't in jail, and to force any medical evaluation on him if he wasn't in jail.
Right.
Patrick, I don't know if someone's already in jail, whether the Fortman Act would have any
play. Not just, and maybe it should, because, I mean, people certainly still continue drug use inside jail.
Yeah, you can get a judge, you can petition a judge for some type of medical help or evaluation.
That's what I was going to say, Laura. Worst case scenario, you bring the petition and the judge says no, you're right back where you started. But if he said yes and got your grandson the help he needed, my gosh, that could be life-changing.
If your son, if your grandson would get out, part of the probation would be attending or receiving some type of medical help.
Right. So I didn't know if it would influence the judge to recommend rehab rather than jail. So you're saying no, probably.
Well, the judge will, whoever your son's or grandson's attorney would be, can propose certain things the grandson's willing to do as part of his probation, and that would probably be the way to go about it.
Okay.
I'm sorry about your grandson.
Yes. Thank you.
Bye. All right. Thanks for calling. You're listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. We have about less than 15 minutes left in the show. If you have a legal question, now's the time to call. Phone lines are open at 877-943-9673.
And, Joe, I want to go back one caller.
Mm-hmm.
Since that was Plotz and they mentioned moving from another state, I'm putting that in the moving column because it was specifically about moving. Granted, they were Plotz. It wasn't furniture. It
wasn't a moving company.
Well, kind of was. It's a company that moves things. It just moves bodies into a ground.
Maybe we should ask our next caller whether they think that would...
Fair enough. Cool. Independent analysis.
Yeah. All right, so if you have a legal question... 877-943-9673. 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open, and we'd be more than glad to help you in the remaining moments. By the way, we have offices. We had a call there from Jacksonville. We have an office there. We have an office. Caller from Haines City. We have an office there. Tampa. We have an office. Brooksville. We have an office in the Trinity area. Which Holiday in Brooksville. I don't know, is Brooksville close to Trinity?
Ish. We need to update the photo.
We have Sarasota, we have an office in Lakewood Ranch. In St. Pete, we have an office in Largo. So most of our callers are within a place we have an office. If you'd like more information about the firm, ask an attorney all about... we have a website, which is attypip.com. attypip.com. We don't charge for that first office visit, and we have a toll-free number, 1-800-226-3529.
Can you go back to that photo?
1-800-226-3529.
Joe, how old were you in that picture? For those of you watching on WeBeamTV.com, how old were you in that picture?
That was just taken a couple of years ago, I think.
Right. I was 24 in that picture.
All right.
So that picture's... a couple years old.
So, yeah, we're working on a new website. This will be launched at the end of July, by the way. So,
right.
Our picture might be gone. So, let's go to Dave in Lake Wales.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
Hey, I recently bought a used vehicle, and they said that I bought it as is. But after I got it, I found out that it's got a lot of problems. Under the Florida Lemon Law, can I force them to take this back because the frame's busted on this vehicle?
Well, unfortunately, you told us that you bought it as is.
Yes, sir.
So you had the right to have it inspected before you bought it, and you bought whatever you bought, you bought. You bought it, you know, as is. So I don't think the Lemon Law is going to apply in your case.
But are they allowed to sell a vehicle with a busted frame? It seems like that would be unsafe to myself and to everyone on the road.
What did you pay for it?
$9,000.
What kind of vehicle is it, if I may ask?
A Jeep Wrangler.
Well, did you take it for a test drive?
Yeah, for about 10 minutes. They gave me a 10-minute test drive right around the block.
And how long did it take you to find out the car had a problem after you bought it?
About 2 weeks. got underneath it, and we started checking it.
So the seller's position could be that the frame was fine when we sold it to you. You busted it in the weeks after you purchased it. I mean, that's going to be their defense.
Yeah, the frame's rusted out underneath it.
Well, you know, they're going to say you bought it as is, and you signed a contract, and you had the right to inspect it or have it inspected, and you drove it. And we don't feel like we have any responsibility toward you. And then you take them to court, and what are you going to say? I mean, did they commit some fraudulent act? Did they take an effort to conceal it? You signed an as-is contract. You know, they're going to have a pretty strong case to convince the court that they to have no liability on this. So what could you possibly say to make them liable when you bought an as-is contract?
I just thought that with a busted frame that they wouldn't be able to sell it like that.
You can talk to a few attorneys and see if they'll take your case, but I doubt anyone is going to give you much hope that you're going to be successful.
But it sounds like your case of about being framed is busted.
Yeah. Yep, sure is. All right, thanks, guys.
All right. Let's go to a Pat in Central Florida.
Oh, here we go.
Pat.
Yes. Hi. Since I've got two attorneys on the phone, and y'all were talking about moving, my question is, if you're moving, should you bring your contract with the moving company that they offer you to have an attorney review it before you agree to it?
Ladies and gentlemen, this is what you call an ace in the hole. When you need
Patrick's mother
question.
Wants him to win our little contest.
That's
here.
Right. Hey, Mom.
You're not supposed to know.
You should have said Alice from Tampa.
No, she wouldn't have done that because that's lying, and she would have felt bad about it.
You should have mumbled your first name so the
slurred your speech. Right. She's never tasted alcohol, Joe. She's not going to do that. So.
So,
well, I thought that was a good question.
So, Pat, do you think the cemetery plot question, it had anything to do with moving?
Oh, I think that was genius, yes.
Genius. Oh. Not just yes, Joe, but a genius yes.
All right. All right, well, I see where this is going now. So
I have to share a quick story with you. Another buddy of mine has a mom a lot like mine who's just super proud of her son. He did a concert, and they asked the mom, how was the concert? And she didn't just say it was good. She goes, it was majestic.
All right.
And when Christy heard the mom, she's like, oh, my gosh, that's your mom. She's so proud of her son. So thanks for calling in, Mom. I love you.
All right. Love y'all, too.
Talk to you
bye-bye.
Later. All right, bye-bye. Let's go to Alan in Lakeland.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Alan, you're on.
Thank you so very much. I appreciate it. I have a relative who is, they have a lot of physical problems and sicknesses, and he is, has some baseball cards that he's selling that he had already invested in, and I'm selling them for him. I've already sold them. About $1,400 worth. He didn't keep heavy records of what he paid for them. I'm just wondering what the taxes might be at the end of the year. A ballpark figure. I'm not sure. Somebody mentioned 12%, 20%. Hopefully I'm making sense on this.
All right. So what is his source of income right now beside the baseball cards?
He works at a company, and his wife does some church work also. Not a large income, though.
I don't think the sale of personal property would be like that would be income taxable.
I don't think so, because I don't think it's over the threshold, and he's not a business. It's a private sale. I also think that it's going to depend on what his basis was in the cards from the Internal Revenue Code federally. But again, I don't think it's over the threshold. I would check with a good CPA, and if you need one, Joe or I can give you the name of one who will talk to you for free just to give you a heads up on whether or not that needs to be declared or how it gets declared or on what tax form it gets declared. But it sounds like to me, because the amount's so small, I mean, granted, that's a lot for baseball cards, but in the grand scheme of the Internal Revenue Code, that's a pretty small amount. I don't think it's going to be an issue.
All right, I appreciate it. Yes, I would appreciate it if you can put me in contact with the CP. So thank you so very much.
Well, I'll give you my email address, and you can email me the request at Joe, J-O-E, at attypip.com.
What's the most valuable card in the collection? I'm just curious, if you don't mind sharing.
They're not really very valuable. Perhaps maybe $20, $30, $40. Nothing in the hundreds.
I still have my Ricky Henderson rookie card.
Wow.
I know.
Was this a cash transaction?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a person who does deal in these things, and he out west, and he just paid a lump sum for them.
Was there a receipt involved?
No, there's just a check, and as a matter of fact, I want to deposit the check.
Oh, well, it wasn't cash, it was a check.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
It wasn't financed.
Okay. All right.
They wrote the receipt on the little stick of gum that comes in the pack.
All right. So. All right. All right, Alan, just call me and I'll give you a good CPA.
Okay.
Joe at attypip.com.
Okay. Got it. Thank you so very much. You have a blessed rest of the day.
Thank you.
Goodbye now.
I had a client, speaking of baseball cards, I had a client this week from Sun City Center who pitched and won the many years ago, because I don't know, I'm trying to guess his age, but I think he was over 80.
Mm-hmm.
But he pitched the winning game in the SEC championship and then went to be a pro baseball player for Kansas City and some other teams. And when he comes back to sign his trust, he's going to bring me his baseball card.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
So
now most of those guys, you don't have to share on the air, but most of those guys work in baseball. Does he still work in baseball somewhere?
No, he's retired in Sun City.
Really?
So, yeah.
Okay.
But he had a big ring. He had a big gold University of Florida ring on his finger, so I commented on it.
Yeah.
I said, man, what a nice ring that is. And he says, oh, yeah, that's my SEC championship baseball ring for the University of Florida many years ago. And then he went on to tell me, I asked him questions about baseball, and he has told me about his pro career, which is pretty cool.
And, hey, to make it there is a huge achievement.
Yep. Let's go to Ralph in Sun City Center.
Okay, this is a question pertaining about the Property Owners Association, something that's written into the booklet that's given to all the homeowners there.
Yes, sir.
And this is under general provisions, and there's a statement here pertaining to legal action between a homeowner and the association. And it states that if the association is the losing party against any homeowner, such costs and expenses, including reasonable attorney's fees payable to the prevailing party, and those incurred by the association itself, may be assessed against such homeowner's lot, as provided in Article 8. So it would seem to me that if the association has a suit against a homeowner, and they lose, it would seem to be unreasonable power for them to be able to put an assessment against the homeowner's property and lot.
Well, it's governed by what the bylaws say, so if you disagree with what the bylaws say, at the next meeting, see if you can get a majority, bring it up for a vote, and see if you can get the law changed. But let me ask you this. So suppose the association loses the case. Suppose the association brings a case and loses. Who would you propose to pay the legal fees? The board members?
No. Well, either the board member or the association itself out of their reserve.
Well, who's going to fund the association?
Yeah, the members associate. Yeah. Hey, we're going to have to pull a Joe Biden on you and tell you we can't answer that question. Our time is up. But you can call me, Ralph. I was just being funny, but I'm trying to be funny. You can call me there, and I'd be glad to discuss it with you further there in Sun City. I'm there every week, and I'll give out my phone number, 1-800-226-3529. Patrick, give us your hear the music there. Give us your contact
information. Yeah, it's Patrick Smith at attypip.com, on Instagram at Attorney Patrick Smith. And the main office line, 352-241-8760. Thanks for having me, Joe.
Thank you.